Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Barbara Peters from the Poison Pen. I'm in my office in Scottsdale. We have May Comp, who is at home somewhere in an undisclosed location in Texas, and Jesse Yusutando, who is joining us from Jakarta, Indonesia, where, in fact, it is the next morning. So have you had your coffee, or do you start with tea, Jesse?
I have my coffee.
Excellent. So this is really fun. One great thing about Zoom is you can bring international people and American people together to have a really wonderful conversation. So May's book, The Reason We're Here, is called My Summer Darlings, and she's very kindly signed copies for us, as she did for The Hunting Wives, which was the book that we got together and discussed last year. Jesse, whom I have not met, we are actually reading your Dial A for Andes. This is one of our discussion club books. I'm trying to remember which one. I think it's this month maybe June. Maybe it's June. And anyway, Jesse is the author of adult, young adult, and children middle grade books, but she's also written two wonderful books, Dial A for Andes, For Andes, and A Wedding. May, you have covers of those, don't you? Did I see you hold those up? Would you do that? Because I don't have them with me. Thank you. There it is. I love the covers. I think the colors are you know, and the figures and all are really delightful. So they're with the same publisher, Berkeley, which does interesting work. Mm-hmm. And it appears that the rights for Dial A for Andes have been bought by Netflix. Is that right?
Yes, it's very exciting.
I'm not sure. Am I frozen or is Jesse?
Oh, I think there's a lag.
She's going to come back. Okay. Our internet at this heat is 104. It can freeze. So it's okay, Jesse. If you disappear, just exit and go back in, and Patrick will let you back in.
Okay.
Yeah, it happens for sure. Anyway, in fact, has For Andes and An Andy been optioned by Netflix?
Yes, it has, and I'm so excited about it. I'm gonna run and like grab my dog.
Okay.
I'll be back in like 10 seconds. I don't know if you can hear her barking.
Yeah, okay. There was a bidding war for it. And Netflix won, so it's hugely exciting, and it's just going to make the best adaptation. I love Jesse's book so much, and she's just such a genius plotter. So cute.
So cute. Just leave her in. Well, please, look at you. I can open the door and let my three in, and then we'll really go crazy.
Yeah, I love it.
Just keep her around. That's fine. I think dogs add to the whole mix. Maybe I'll attract mine. In any case, that is exciting, May. So thank you for filling us in on that. And Jesse has agreed to be the host and ask May penetrating questions about summer darlings. And if not, I certainly can. But I do want to ask one just to lead off, and I'm not even sure that I agree with this, but there seems to be a thing about toxic female friendship. Those are the words being used. And I've avoided them all my life, so I'm not even sure I understand how the phrase goes. But do tell me, May, you know, is that something that interests you? Have you experienced it? Why is it that you have now written two books about it?
Thank you, Barbara. That's such a great question. I too, thankfully, have avoided toxic female friendships in real life, and I have really wonderful friends. So, but growing up in East Texas, where the people are, shall I say, high-spirited, there's a lot of interesting friendships and dynamics, especially among women, and power dynamics. And, you know, one minute you're hugging each other and drinking wine, and the next minute they're tossing wine in your face. So I was witness to some of that. And I just think it's fascinating because, like, male friendships seem, by contrast, a little more simple and straightforward. You know, they're talking about fantasy football or whatever. But female friendships are so much there's just so much to unpack there and so much going on. Mm. And I also love the movie Heathers. So yeah, I love the whole Mean Girls thing, and I don't know why. And maybe it has to do with female power. Maybe I can make myself sound smart and then I'm not just writing about despicable people, but
I'm wondering, after I read your book, if women compete more for relationships, whereas men are much more objective. You know, they might be competing over sports, or they might be competing over money or whatever, but I think guys are not. Women are always sort of on the more supplicant end of relationships. I don't think that's ever fully gone away.
I love that, Barbara. That's so well said.
All right. Now I'm done, Jesse. I'm going to go let my puppy in while you take a, so we can have rival dogs during this conversation. Yes. I'll be right back.
Sounds good. So May, can you tell us what My Summer Darlings is about?
Jesse, I just want to hang out with you. I'm like, oh my God, it's Jesse. But yes, I'll get professional. Yeah, so it's about three lifelong friends who live in this small town in East Texas. And it takes place over a summer. And each of the women are approaching middle age. They're about to turn 40. And they're like each at different crossroads. One's a recent divorcee. One's more like a reproaching housewife.
Oh. Dog.
Oh, so beautiful.
Number one.
Look at that pupper.
Oh, is she not cute?
Oh, she's so adorable.
No.
Come here. Dog number two. There he is.
Gorgeous. So pretty. I love this.
They're a brother and sister.
Aww.
They're so beautiful, Barbara.
And they're noisy. All right, I'll let them go. I just want Jesse to be self-conscious about her puppy.
Thank you. I feel less alone now.
And so the three women, so there's the recent divorcee, the repressed housewife, and sort of the socialite who fears her beauty is fading, even though it's not. It's like in this big midlife crisis. And then this handsome, mysterious stranger moves to town and upends all their lives over the course of a summer. We're obsessed with him.
Oh, I mean, I love it. I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, I just don't know where, you know, the story is going to take me, but I am like so in for the ride. And there were so many twists and turns and, you know, so many moments where I was like, oh, she did not just do that. And it was just really delicious. So
I'm
really glad that Barbara brought up, you know, the toxic female friendships, because that was going to be my next question. Okay, so you are like the nicest person I know. And you're like writing these conniving, horrible women that we love to read about. And our mutual friend, we have a little group, Maya and Lori Elizabeth Flynn and I, and it's called The Unlikable Female Authors. And I know Lori is here watching. She is also so sweet and kind and generous, and she also writes unlikable women. And I love all of your characters, and I find them so compelling. But I would love to know what drives you to write, you know, these unlikable characters, and they're so unapologetic too about like their motivations.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I just have to say, like, I know your adult suspense isn't coming out until next summer.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'm not done with you yet, but talk about unlikable, and it's so great. Whatever your head's gonna spin when you read it, it is so wow, it's so devious and twisty and just brilliant. I love it. I just had to put that out there, Jesse, because I'm upset.
Thank you.
I think there's something fascinating about letting women walk that edge and not having them be these model citizens that the world would have them be. And I think it's just so much fun to poke at that and really let, well, I mean, for me anyway, like I don't do a lot of plotting and planning out. Mm-hmm. So I really kind of get in my characters' heads. So I set them up mm-hmm. to have like this sort of, you know, I lit the powder keg and wanted to watch it explode mm-hmm. and sort of let them do what they're going to do. And it's fun as a writer, it's fun to sort of do those things, you know, like, cause you don't have to leave your house and it's not dangerous, but it's like fantasy world or something. And then, but I also, you know, you've heard me like go off about likability in female characters. I just mm-hmm. really think women should be allowed to be, you know, downright despicable or mm-hmm. betraying, infidelity, filled with lust, you know, all those things mm-hmm. that we never discuss with male characters. It's like, of course. Oh, and he's so mm-hmm. watching while he's doing that. Oh, that's so mm-hmm. And for women, it's like, whoa. Or at least that's some of the response I get from some of my books. Is people don't understand why like a main character is cheating or something. And it kind of baffles me. So I want to push that envelope as far as I can and still be allowed to publish. Mm.
I love it. They're just so deliciously wicked. And I'm like, I cannot have enough of them. And it's like a really, yeah, it's like filthy goodness. I love it. So a lot of wild things happen in this book. So what was the wildest thing that you had to kind of research? And, you know, maybe you were a little bit afraid that the FBI might kick down your door, because I know I am.
That's so funny. I think probably the twist at the end where things get mm-hmm. take a much darker turn. Mm-hmm. And starting out, I didn't know exactly what that was going to be. I just knew it was going to be something. So it was mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to give any spoilers away, but
yeah,
I think that's it. And maybe also like, I don't tend to do too much research, but mm-hmm. you know, how long could a woman be tied up on the mm-hmm. forest floor and survive, and what her body going through? So it would be somewhat believable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that stuff.
Oh my God. I can't imagine Googling, you know, how long can you tie a woman up?
I'm sure I paraphrased it because I'm very, very aware of Big Brother.
Yeah. They'd immediately be like, oh my God, what is she planning?
Exactly. It's funny.
I love it. So like the Hunting Wives, My Summer Darlings has multiple points of view. I mean, I think this one has three points of view. Which character was your favorite to write? And was it also the character you found easiest or most challenging?
I think I really liked Cynthia's point of view. And for people watching that haven't read it yet, she's the repressed housewife, and her POV is given to us through this journal that she's keeping in secret because she's that repressed that she's in therapy and the therapist is having her journal and she hides it in her lingerie drawer because she knows her husband is working there because he's so tuned out he doesn't even have lingerie, and that's part of her struggle and dissatisfaction. Mm-hmm. So I really liked digging into her head because I didn't know what was going on with her until I was able to, you know, write those passages. But speaking about points of view, can we talk about the book that you're, the five points of view that you just did? Five?
Yeah, so that one is still with my editor. I'm still waiting for her feedback. So I don't actually know if like I've managed to pull it off or if she's gonna come back and be like, oh my God, this is terrible.
No way. I know you and I can't wait to read it. Oh my gosh. Can you I know you're supposed to be talking about me, but I want to talk about you too. Can you tell us anything about it, or is it still hush hush?
I'm sure I can like talk about it a bit. So I'm very excited about this book. It is Knives Out meets Kim's Convenience. So it's about this 60-year-old Chinese American lady who owns a tea shop in the heart of San Francisco. And the tea shop is kind of like falling to pieces. Everyone's kind of forgotten about it. And she's sad and lonely. And then one morning she wakes up and goes down to the tea shop and she finds a dead body, as you do, you know. And so she decides that, you know, no one can sniff out a wrongdoing better than a suspicious Chinese mother can. And so she takes it upon herself to do the investigation. And in doing so, she comes across like four individuals who each has like their own points of view and how they're all connected to the murder. And she tries to solve it all on her own. So I'm super excited.
Oh, I can't wait to read it. It just sounds like I want it right now. So whenever you can send it to me, I'm just, it sounds fantastic.
I can't wait. I can't wait for you to read it. Thank you so much for asking about it.
Of course. When you told me about it, I was like, oh my God, that's just genius. It sounds amazing.
It was really hard to write because I've never written like a murder mystery before where they're actively trying to solve it. Because like with Dial A for Aunties, I did have a murder, you know, happened, but there's no mystery. Like, we all know who did it. It was, you know, the main character accidentally kills her blind date. That's like the whole starting point. And then we just kind of go from that to like, oh, how do they get away with it? So I wasn't used to kind of working backwards. And that was actually something I wanted to ask you about. Do you find it challenging? Like, how do you, because a lot of like the mystery in both of your books, they're just so twisted and there are a lot of like unexpected turns. So did you know beforehand, like, you know, where you were going to go, or were you kind of pantsing and hoping it all works out?
I do a lot of pantsing, but I can't really say that is really accurate. I used to say that because I thought that's what I was doing, but I usually have like a one page synopsis, kind of an overview, almost like a pit. And I try to stick to that because when I hit about page 50, and then when I get in what we call the flabby middle and I want to throw it in the trash.
Oh God. Yeah.
I'm like, this is what you wanted to write about. And then some plot stuff will come to me. I might have like some of the main plot points, but a lot of the stuff does just have to come out through the writing. And that's my process. And I wish it was a little different because the more complex the thriller or the mystery, the more scaffolding. So I might change my ways in the future, but that's how I've done it so far. So yeah, I don't know.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So, but do you know like the biggest twist before you start writing?
I didn't in The Hunting Wives know the biggest twist, but it came to me about halfway. And then for this one, I knew there was going to be that final twist. I just wasn't 100% sure, like I was saying, what it was. And I had some discussion with my editor about what it was, because what I wanted it to be was like even far darker than what it is. And
oh my gosh, yeah. You'll have to tell me in private chat so you
for sure. And I think ultimately she was right, it was just too dark, and it's like, no, May, you don't need to go that dark.
Gosh, I cannot imagine, because like right now it's pretty, you know, freaking dark already.
Yes, I agree. Definitely so. Let me add a note here, because you know, we were talking about toxic female friendship and so forth, but you are also writing really about marriage. I mean, particularly with Cynthia, you know, a long-term marriage, and whether that makes you more vulnerable to the handsome stranger coming into town or indifferent to him, whatever it might be. I mean, he's the flashpoint, but it really is where he catches these women in their relationships. So we have a newly divorced and pretty bitter or upset anyway. That's Jen, right? Because she's gotten kind of screwed by her husband's divorce lawyer. She's had to leave Austin and the bright lights to go back to her smaller hometown. And then the other two are married. So, you know, and Cynthia, I think Cynthia is the longest, right? Isn't Cynthia the longest married?
Yes, she is.
And so, you know, I thought when you wrote it, was she, does that make her either the most resistant to this new guy and the sort of thing that's going to happen, or is it going to make her the most vulnerable to it because she's been there long enough to be bored or unfulfilled or whatever word you want to happen to use? Did you think about that when you set her up?
I didn't consciously, Barbara, but that's so brilliant. I'm going to steal that for my future launch dates because I love that. It really is a lot about marriage. And I did want her to, you know, she resists him for more than the others, but not for that long. But I did want to explore that deep dissatisfaction inside of her. So I think you're right. I think it's because she has been married the longest. And also her husband is, he's just kind of quite boring to her at this point.
Well, you know, people often write about guys in midlife crises and how they want to throw off, you know, their family or their wives and go on to something juicier and younger and so forth. And I thought it was sort of fun that was Cynthia, you know, you've turned that on your head, on its head rather. And, you know, we have Cynthia, the person who thinks, you know, do I really want to get old with this guy? You know, maybe there's, and then the thing is that there are three women and only one guy. You know, you can't just carve him up. He's not like a puppy. You can pass around like Jesse's puppy, you know, and you can have him for a day and then we're going to move him over here. But then, of course, we don't really know what he's all about either. You know, I mean, he's like, you know, the guy that rides into town, but is he going to stay? Why is he here? You know, I mean, there's almost a Great Gatsby echo to this in some senses, if you really think about it.
I love that. Wow. Thank you. That's
why you talk to me. I tell you how you can talk about this book to everybody else.
I love these conversations with you so much, Barbara, honestly. In that movie, The Witches of Eastwick was really in my brain.
Oh yeah?
Because I loved that growing up. And it's so sort of used the same framework with the three women and the mysterious guy. And yeah, it's the stranger comes to town trope. But I wanted to, you know, and also, yeah, I think really hit on the midlife crisis of females and have fun with that.
I mean, The Stranger Comes to Town can be either sex. I mean, you can think about Reacher, you know, I mean, the classic stranger comes to town, you know, whatever. But I do think you've done an interesting thing with it. And basically, he's a scarce resource, you know. Yeah. It's like everybody wants water, but there's only one little river there. So
it's funny.
You're in Indonesia. So is the culture there different, Jesse? Would people tend to be exactly the same if you were, you know, three women in Jakarta or a village and some guy came to town?
It's similar and different in many ways. So I'm Chinese Indonesian, and like the Chinese community, you know, we're quite different from like the native Indonesian community, I guess, partly because of like religion, because like the native Indonesian community is mostly Muslim, whereas the Chinese community is mostly like Christian or Catholic. And so there are like just differences, you know, based on that. But I actually feel like in a lot of ways, the Chinese community is more conservative. So like divorce is still very much like, oh my God, you know, whereas it's actually a lot more accepted within like the native Indonesian community. So like if a guy were, you know, come into town, I think that my community would be a lot more repressed about it. And yeah, I don't, you, I'm sure people here have affairs, but they're just so much more discreet and like secretive about it, right? Because especially if you're a woman and you were the one who had an affair, you know, it's like unforgivable, and you'd kind of just be an outcast in society. Whereas like if you're a man and you have an affair, then people would kind of just like, oh, you know, of course he did, you know, and like I've known, you know, men who had affairs and they're still very much accepted by their family and friends, and even where like their wives would kind of turn a blind eye to it. And so I really loved reading My Summer Darlings because I was like, yeah, you know, like if women knew that they weren't going to become like social outcasts, then I'm sure that they would feel a bit more freedom in, you know, pursuing their selfish needs the way that men do. So, yeah.
Well, not to take this to the current political stage, but you do have to obviously, you can't ignore the fact that contraception and, you know, birth control of whatever sort and women's control over their own bodies makes a big difference. Mm. Because, you know, the penalties for women who had affairs and so forth in the past were a lot more severe because the consequences could be more severe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think, I mean, could you have really written this book, you know, set it in the 1940s or something when, you know, abortion was illegal and contraception was only a dream? And, you know, could people behave like that quite so recklessly?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And it would probably be a very different kind of story.
Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting story in the context of where we are. Especially in Texas, if I may say so.
Oh, yes, please say so. Oh, good grief. Yeah, it's funny when I did an interview with the Dallas Morning News, and I could tell that my head was on fire about the whole reproductive rights issue because I'm so angry in it about women and women being, you know, edited in a sense in fiction. But all that was just, I was in a real mood that day. So, it's crazy times.
It is crazy times, but you know, I do think the idea of the more liberated woman or the woman, you know, freer to act and so forth definitely ties up with some sort of control over your body. And so you have to, you know, I'm wondering how powerful literature may be in this whole argument. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah, it is. I guess time will tell.
Do you ever get any like angry messages about your books?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. And I feel like I just delete them. Like if the person's taken the time to write me through my website and that open it up and I get the emails, like I used to keep them because then I would think, wow, this person's so angry. Like, what, are they going to come after me? I need to have this. And now I just delete them.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is really scary. Are they mostly from female readers or do you get the occasional male reader?
Really, it's the female readers, which is crazy. And I don't get a ton, but yeah. Do you ever get it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've received messages that made me really glad that I don't live in America. I'm like, you can't get me. I'm like halfway around the world.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's really a horrible reflection on how we are at the moment.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that, I don't know about you, May. I mean, it may be a lot, it's probably a lot scarier because you know that they're closer in vicinity to you. But it kind of tells me, like, oh, I feel like I'm doing something right, you know, because I'm making people uncomfortable. Because one of my aim with my books is that I want to treat my female characters the way that male characters have largely been treated in books. And then I want to treat my male characters the way that female characters are mostly treated in books. So I, you know, my male characters, they will get murdered, they will be fridged to further the plot.
And I love that. That's one of the things I love most about your books, Jesse. And that's so brilliant. I've never consciously thought of that before, but you do that so well.
But I think you're doing the same thing with your books.
I don't know. You do it well, and especially this, I'm not done with you yet. Oh my goodness. I'm so excited. When is that going to come out? I know we talked about that, but I can't. You have, Jesse is so prolific, y'all, that I need like a flow chart for all your release dates. And you just, because like this summer, right, you signed a 5-book deal with Berkeley, right? Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. That was very exciting.
Nobody does that. That's amazing.
Yeah. So the 5-book deal, we will have 2 more Dial A for Auntie's books and 2 of like the adult suspense, and then 1 unspecified comedic book, which is going to end up being the one that I just finished writing with the 5 points of view, the Knives Out and Kim's Convenience. So yeah, that is exciting. I'm very excited about my adult suspense, which is coming out, I believe it'll be around September 2023 or August. Hopefully August, because I just can't wait to publish in that genre, you know, because that genre is my jam, like suspense. And I do feel like there's way too much, you know, murder and sexual violence against like female characters within like the suspense thriller genre. I mean, I don't even read male authors in that genre anymore, unless they're like they come highly recommended by like a trusted friend, because you know there's just too much like sexual violence and it's always graphic, and so it just makes me so happy to know that there are people like May who are taking it on and, you know, like really turning the genre on its head and really kind of making us question so much about everything, about like, you know, women and our motivations and, you know, our desires, and questioning a lot and pushing a lot of boundaries. So I actually wanted to ask you, are you hoping that your readers like relate and empathize with these women because, you know, they're so unapologetic about what they want? Or are you hoping that readers will kind of feel like uncomfortable and be like, oh, that's, you know, I'm very concerned because I actually really relate to your characters, which is very worrying.
So for the Hunting Wives, I think I more wanted to make people uncomfortable, and I wasn't thinking too much about maybe what the reader would think. With this one, I did set out to try to make them a little more grounded in reality and a little more relatable. And they're, you know, these women, they're like the Hunting Wives. It's like you can hear the Jaws music, and the women are wealthy. They're like, you know, very hard to relate to for the everyday woman, but they're also, they're so villainous. And I feel like these women were like real people. So I did try to give them qualities that readers could, you know, see themselves in to a degree. And that was my goal in the beginning. But then, like I said, they kind of do their own thing. So they probably veer away from that little goal that I had. But I did want to make them real. I mean, I wanted to make their pain real, their restlessness real, their desire real, all that. I want it to be authentic. We'll see what people think. I have to hold the finished edition up too, because the cover's like brighter than the ARC, and I love it. And Berkeley does so well with our covers, Jesse. I love it.
I mean, I love the pop of color.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and the cherries. Oh, it just promises such a good time.
Yeah. With our publisher and their cover design, it's like, and all the graphics they make and everything, they're so creative. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a lot of say in your cover design?
I didn't have too much. They brought me some stuff early on and I didn't feel like it was right. But then the next thing they brought out was this. And I was like, I don't need to see anymore. This is genius. How about you?
Yeah, so they gave me a couple of options with Dal A for Aunties, and I only had a few tweaks, and then I was like, can I see the like my name in a different font? Like, can you make it curlier? And then they did it, because they're very good at taking on suggestions. Yeah. And they were like, oh, like this? And I was like, no, it looks horrible. Why did you listen to me? I don't know anything about cover design. And ever since then, I was like, okay, like, don't ask me, because I know nothing, clearly. Yes. And I would just ruin it if you let me.
I would too. I really don't know anything about that stuff, honestly. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yes, I love your
covers. But both of your covers have been amazing, because I saw the cover of The Hunting Wives, and I was immediately like, no, I need to read this like now. I think that was how I got to know you, because I think I might have popped into your DMs and demanded an ARC to save on the cover.
Is that how, okay, because I thought I stalked you first, but maybe, I don't remember, but I do remember you saying, you said, like, whose arm do I have to twist to get the ARC?
Well, we know what Jessie is working on, or we know what her forthcoming series of work is. What are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of edits on my next one, which should come out, I think, in August, September 2023, like Jesse's, which is going to be so fun. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to do some.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we're going to do some events. I'm manifesting that now.
Oh my gosh, I really hope so. Wait, can you share with us the title? Because it's my favorite title ever.
Thank you. Yes, it's called A Likeable Woman. And it is it
already implies she isn't.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's the short pitch is it's more of a traditional murder mystery. So it was a lot more to figure out, actually. But it's about a 30-something year old woman who has believed her mom committed suicide. Actually, she's been told her mom committed suicide since she was 15, but she's always believed her mother was actually murdered. And she left her small town in East Texas, and she's been in LA, and her life has been stifled. She hasn't wanted to come back home. But then she gets an invitation to a vow renewal party from one of her frenemies. And then her aging grandmother calls and says, I have something of your mother's, and I think you're actually right about how she died. You need to come to this. And so she gets lured back home. And then, of course, danger starts to lurk around her as she gets closer to figuring out, you know, what might have happened to her mom. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of edits to do still. And Jesse, you're going to help cheer me on.
Oh my gosh, I was so excited too. Like, I mean, the pitch is amazing. You've got all of the factors that I love. You know, a mystery from the past and no one believing her. And I'm so excited. Are your edits pretty major, or, I mean, hopefully they're like just tweaks?
They're not big structural edits, which I'm relieved about, but there is a lot more digging in. It's two storylines. So it's the daughter's present day, and then It's a book within a book. So the mother left a manuscript behind, an unfinished manuscript. And that is the past voice. And so there's a lot more digging in to be done on the mother story, because she was the unlikable woman in her neighborhood. And she was an artist. And yeah. So a lot of the notes have to do with fleshing that out and then tweaking the mystery and the suspense part of it too. So I'm excited. I'm ready to, when launch is over, really get back and dig in.
Maybe this would be a good moment if nobody has any major questions to ask. Do you, Jesse, or should we ask Patrick to see if we have audience questions? What would you like?
I have one last question. What is the one takeaway that you hope readers leave with after reading My Summer Darling?
Gosh, I guess I really, for this one, I really just want people to be entertained. But I also do want people to maybe realize there's a lot more going on with women under the surface. And you may not even know, because you may not get to read their secret diaries that they keep in their lingerie drawer. So, and then the whole mother, teenage daughter thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hope that resonates with some women. That was really fun. Cause that toxic relationship that I got to play with. And also be careful when you go to East Texas. That's a big takeaway.
Oops. All right.
I love it.
Well, Patrick, do you want to come join us and see if we have questions from the audience or whether they've all fled?
They haven't fled. Let's see. It looks like just a lot of fans and friends are tuning in. Let's see here. Yeah, it looks like there's some of the unlikable women group are tuning in. yeah, any real questions? Let's see here. Well, I guess I have a question for both of you. Let's start with Jesse. Jesse, how did you get started? Did you always know that you wanted to be a writer? And when did you start writing?
So I've always loved writing and reading, but I didn't really take it seriously until after I graduated college. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with my life? I'm mediocre at everything except for writing. So I was like, I'll try writing. and thank goodness, you know, it's worked out. So, yeah.
Do you have any unpublished manuscripts, or were you able to get the first thing that you finished published?
Oh, so many. So Dalle for Andes is actually the ninth manuscript that I've written. And The Obsession, which is my debut, that was number 5. So I have seven dead manuscripts in my folder.
How about you, May? When did you first start? You've been writing forever?
Yeah, I started in around 95, and I say started, but I was still so young and I was a college kid. But I came across this fascinating story, and it's basically of a jazz musician named Rahsaan Roland Kirk, and he was blind, but he taught himself to play 3 saxophones at the same time, and he just overcame all these staggering odds, and I became very obsessed with him and his story. He died on my 4th birthday, so I never got to meet him. But at that moment, I was like possessed with this. I have to tell his story. So even though I didn't think of myself as a writer, it was this calling. And so I traveled around the country. I'm really good friends with his widow. I've stayed in his home. And that's what set me on the path. And I'm still working on that book. And I really hope to finish it soon and find a home for it. So that's definitely my big unpublished book that I've toiled a long time on and trying to get it right. So
the lives of musicians, especially, you know, jazz musicians and blues musicians. I mean, what fertile ground for novelists. I mean, they're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And his really was just unbelievable story of human will.
I have a question coming in from Kelly, who would like to know, why choose East Texas as a setting as opposed to Austin or somewhere like that?
That's a great question. Austin feels just very happy to me, and everyone is happy, and they're swimming in Barton Springs, and they're on Instagram, and they're happy. East Texas is very noir, and it's got this lush piney wood forest, and it's dark and mysterious, and the vibe there is, it's just different. So, yeah, I just love hanging out in the woods there. And I'm probably homesick a little, so it's a way to visit home.
Have you read Joe Lansdale's work?
I love Joe Lansdale, yes.
National treasure, I think, really.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt.
And the topography of Texas is so varied, you know, from the Llano Estacado to the swamp country and in the east.
It's like California that way. You know, they have such diverse landscapes and they're so big.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, some good questions are coming in. Melinda would like to know, Jesse, when writing a comedic mystery, how do you walk the line between farce and comedy without taking away from the dark parts of the murder / suspense? That's interesting.
Yeah, so comedy, I find actually comedy is perhaps the hardest thing to write. Because, you know, if you get it wrong, it's so painful. I would say the best thing to do is to try and be as authentic as possible, which is why, you know, I have Asian aunties in mind, because that's what I kind of grew up with. And all of the jokes in my books are literally like everything has happened, you know, aside from the dead body. But the things that they say that frustrate like my main character and come across as funny, they're mostly things that my parents or my relatives have said. When I put that in the books, I just felt like, okay, this rings true. It doesn't feel like I'm making up something to be funny. And I think that's kind of how you stay, you know, within like, or you avoid like being a farce.
Let's see here. Can you both talk a little bit about your average, just about your work day as a writer? Do you have any rituals, or, you know, how long do you spend at the keyboard, or a certain word count that you shoot for? Tell us about your process.
Jesse, do you want to take that? Because you get so much more done than I do.
So I used to have so many rituals. I used to be like, oh, I have to have like my tea just right and my bagel, you know, like warm and, you know, like just everything. And I used to waste a lot of time. And then I had kids and now I'm like, oh God, I literally only have like an hour or, you know, at best 2 hours to write. So now I'm very, I'm good at writing anywhere, anytime. And, you know, I've written on my phone, like just thumb typing, and you would be surprised by how much you can actually do, you know, doing that once you take away like, the romance of like, you know, the act of writing. And so now I'm just like, bang it out. And then I'm like, the rest of the day, I don't think about writing at all. You know, the rest of the day, I'm like, with the kids or running errands and chores. So it's very unromantic. I really want, you know, that like cabin in the woods, isolated writer one day. I would love to hear more about yours, May.
Mine's similar in that after my son was born, I had to write stolen moments. So now I'm not at all about it anymore. And I'll write on my phone too. Like if we're at the park and he's, you know, on the swing or just doing, and something comes to me, I'll jot it down. So it's for me, as long as I keep it in my subconscious, then it's not painful. But if I take a few days off, then it's like the worst thing ever to have to get back to it. And I definitely try to write in the before I turn into a pumpkin, and save that for other things. But yeah, that's, that's it.
Kelly writes, and then I had kids is the paragraph ender for so much of my life.
Great. So true.
Okay, Melinda would like to know, May, when writing a multi-voiced book, was it hard, sorry, I lost the thread, was it hard to keep each voice so distinct?
It actually, it wasn't, because the characters were very different to me. So I didn't, and Cynthia's having a different texture, being the journal entry, that made it distinct. And Kitty is so different from Jen. I guess the balancing act more than anything was who was going to reveal what, when, and to whom. Gotcha.
Well, it looks like that's just about it for the questions thus far. Any TV or Hollywood projects going on that you haven't discussed yet?
Ooh, I would love to know, May.
Oh, I was about to say, Jesse, tell us more.
Mine is just the one that was mentioned, and we are talking to production companies for the adult suspense, which is very exciting, but nothing is set in stone with that one yet. But I can totally see my summer darlings, you know, on the screen. I think that there's so much there that lends itself to, you know, this very disturbing and yet delicious show. Are you like, is there anything that we can know about?
Thank you. That would be such a dream come true. Nothing quite yet, but everyone keeps fingers crossed. The Hunting Wives has been optioned, but I'm still not allowed to kind of talk about that yet. So we'll see.
It's so cruel, isn't it? Because you're just like, oh my God, it's the most exciting news, and you just want to shout about it. Yeah. Oh no!
It does sound cool to be able to say, oh yes, but I can't talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's no question that long form television is an absolute gift to writers. You know, it's really been wonderful, the opportunities that it has created. So much better than when everything had to be a movie, and you know, it was so much harder. So I'm delighted. I'm really looking forward to yours, Jesse. So congratulations on your Netflix thing, and we'll see what happens with May. So I want to thank everybody. It's been a real treat to talk to both of you, to meet Jesse and to see May again. We tried to get together earlier this year, but it just didn't work out. So I'm delighted that we could do it now. Anyway, we do have autographed copies of My Summer Darlings, as I mentioned. And because Jesse is in Jakarta, we do not have autographed copies of Dial A for Andy's or for Andy's at a Wedding. But that doesn't mean that the books won't read just as well without her signature. So we encourage you to grab a copy and catch up. Anyway, thanks, Patrick. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Kings River Life magazine now has a mystery podcast called Mystery Rats Maze. Episodes consist of short stories and first chapters of mystery novels read by local actors. To listen to the episodes and subscribe to the podcast, go to mysteryratsmaze.podbean.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more.